Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, served by Applebee's.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Happy Hour. I'm Connor Rogers alongside Matthew Berry, Jay Croucher, our post-Super Bowl edition episode. And Matthew, I want to start with you because you were actually at the game.
Yep.
What was it like, obviously, inside the stadium for a thrilling finish as the Chiefs somehow take care of business again against the 49ers?
You know, it was great. I will say this. I thought the 49ers traveled well. It wasn't like as crazy an eruption as you might think. It was definitely like, you know, I felt like the 49er fans were louder, generally speaking, than the Chiefs fans. And it's also a fairly corporate environment. So, like, there was obviously cheering, but it wasn't like, I've been in a playoff game at Arrowhead and it's like deafening, you know, and this was not that. The other thing is where my particular seats were, I was on the corner of the end zone, and it was the corner of the end zone where they didn't score the winning touchdown. So it was like way in the distance. And you're like, wait, I think, oh shit, I think they just, you know, won the Super Bowl, honey, I think, you know, like, I will say that, like, I'll just say this in general, in all seriousness, like, it is very cool to be at the Super Bowl. This is actually, I counted this up. This was my 15th Super Bowl that I've seen. It's always very cool. It's something that my wife and I do every single year, you know, kind of as a celebration at the end of a long football season. You know, she gets to come out. We leave the kids at home. We go to a few parties and we go to the game. And so it's very cool. It's a fun experience. It's really exciting. It's neat to be able to say, like, I was at the game. I will tell you, though, literally on the flight back, I watched the full game again on NFL Network. They replay it the next day. And so I watched it on NFL Network. It's a better experience. If you just want to watch the game, it's literally a better experience on television. It is.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think as well, to your point, Matthew, about like not knowing really what happened, it's weird, but being in the stadium for the Super Bowl kind of takes some of the drama out of it, because I think when you're watching on TV and you're getting the experience of the halftime ads and all of the ads and then the halftime show and all that, and just the way that everything weaves together, it feels more like an event. Whereas when you're there, I remember being at the Rams-Bengals Super Bowl, and when Aaron Donald gets Joe Burrow on the last play, it's like, I don't even really know what's happening. Like, I can't really tell. I guess the season's over and the Rams just won the Super Bowl. But how was the tension in the stadium when at the end, when particularly at the end of regulation, where it looked like the Chiefs were going to win it when they had 10 seconds left and then into overtime? Was it all clenched up?
Yeah, a little bit. But that's the other thing, just talking about in-home experience versus at the stadium. At the stadium, there's so much more going on, and that's both good and bad. Like you're at the stadium, and then there's somebody like, oh, excuse me, I got to go to the bathroom, or like, you know, here's a beer vendor. And then, like, you know, it's a football game, so I tend to get recognized a decent amount because they're all football fans, right? And they've all watched Sunday Night Football, whatever. So I get stopped a decent amount, or like people come up to me, like, can I have a picture? And like the guy in front of me was like, I love your love hates and wanted to talk to me. He was a very sweet guy, but like, you know, like, has read my comp for like 15 years. And like the guy behind me said, like, so it's just like, there's all this external noise, if you will. Whereas at home, you're focused on the game and you're hearing the announcers. It's second and 12. There's 10 seconds left. Like, you know, like you don't have any, you have to sort of do that yourself, if that makes any sense, where you're just like, okay, you know, down. Did he get a first down? Like, you know, especially if it's on the far, like, you know, looks like you got a first down. No, okay, it's second and one. And let me look at the clock. And you're sort of doing all the tension yourself, if that makes any sense, as opposed to having the announcers and seeing all the graphics all right there in the same visual. So to your point about it definitely was tense, but I guess for me, and I don't know, maybe this is, you know, I was there with my wife, and for me, it all just sort of felt inevitable. Like, that's my biggest thing is like, I never, we made a whole big deal about this along the week, but you know, Connor and I bet the Chiefs. We both predicted the Chiefs would win. We had the bet. We liked the Chiefs plus two. We liked the Chiefs money line. We were consistent throughout the week, Jay. So I can't speak for Connor, but I know you, who had already previously lost a tremendous amount of money on comeback player of the year, had the rest of your kids' college fund on the Niners minus two. And so I don't know how you felt, but for me, because I just knew they were going to win, it was inevitable. It just, there wasn't that crazy tension for me.
Well, I will say, I just want to firstly thank Joe Flacco because I actually lost all of my money on Joe Flacco. So there was no money left to lose for the Super Bowl. So it was quite a pleasant just kind of sit back viewing experience. I do think the inevitability of Mahomes, Connor, on that last drive, particularly in the one at the end of regulation, it felt like, all right, this is minus 600 to go to overtime. Like this, there is no way that he's not keying a field goal at least here to force OT. And then when he was driving at the end, once they got the fourth and one on the naked to the scramble, then it really felt like it was all over. But when the Niners had second and four at the KC9 in overtime, at that point, Connor, I did think that the Niners were going to score and Mahomes would have to score a touchdown.
I thought the same thing, and that's why it was so interesting to hear them after the game, which it's easy to say after the game, but that they would go for two in that situation if it came down to that situation where the Niners wouldn't have gotten that third possession. We'll never know. But ultimately, for me, guys, it felt like, especially from the fourth quarter on, there was no button Steve Wilks, the 49ers defensive coordinator, could press that would work. And Jay, I think of that conversion you just brought up where I thought the broadcast made a good point. You know there's no way they're putting the game on the line by just handing the ball to the running back. But defensively, you still have to respect the threat of the running back getting the ball. You have to respect the threat of Mahomes running, and you have to respect the threat of the pass. And there's only so many different areas you can cover and dedicate help to, and that's why it was a perfect call. Mahomes obviously picks it up himself. And it felt like the last couple drives of the game, it didn't matter what they did, where you look on the other side of it, specifically that blitz from Spags. I think it was McDuffie that got home on a delayed blitz, and Purdy just had to throw it instantly for an incompletion. That's kind of the difference of a guy that, since he won a Super Bowl with the Giants, he's won a Super Bowl with the Chiefs as the defensive coordinator, knows what button to press, and it's a little easier when you're doing it against Brock Purdy, nothing against Brock Purdy. But guys, there was just no answer in crunch time for Mahomes.
No, there certainly wasn't. Let's stay on the 49ers for a second before we get to the brilliance of the Chiefs and Mahomes. But I think there's a bunch of different things you can point to as to why the 49ers lost this game. But yeah, I mean, I think lack of red zone efficiency. They were inside, right? I mean, to your point, like they had first and 10 at the first and goal at the six and couldn't get it in there. And I mean, Patrick Mahomes won MVP, and you sort of get that, but I think you could have made a very strong argument that Chris Jones should have won the MVP. He was unbelievable. Like, and there was a, in that same sequence there that towards the end there, like Chris Jones goes unblocked. Like there's like five or six plays that I think like the 49ers, as they go back and they sort of look like, here's where we lost the game. And there were five or six plays. And that was one of them where they just somehow 74 just on the Niners chose the wrong guy, and Chris Jones comes in unblocked. And if you watch the replay, Ayuk is heading towards the middle. He is wide open. He has beaten his man. And if Brock Purdy has two and a half seconds to throw, as opposed to like one, that's a touchdown to Brandon Ayuk. I mean, but Chris Jones has completely disrupted everything. The fact that they couldn't get home, and then you think about that first drive in the first quarter where McCaffrey fumbles in the red zone as well. Like they had this great opening drive and you're like, oh, where's Spags' defense? Like the Niners were doing whatever they want. And then McCaffrey fumbles. Like to me, I think the McCaffrey fumble, the lack of the block on Chris Jones at the end, that should have been a touchdown to Ayuk. Obviously the punt return fumble, just off the back of your leg. That's a huge mistake. The Jake Moody missed extra point ultimately was a big one. I think all of those were just, massive mistakes in a game where you couldn't have them as well. I mean, those like to me, those four plays were sort of like, that was what did it.
Yeah. I think there'll be some revisionist history and some of it is fair. The idea that, Mahomes is too good and Mahomes is always going to win. Like the Niners played well enough to win the game and the Niners should have been up by a lot more at halftime. That's when they were dominating. And as brilliant as Mahomes was, in regulation, in 60 minutes of football, the Chiefs scored one touchdown and it was off a punt return fumble that they got back at the San Francisco 16. It's not like they were rolling the whole game. They got four of their own fumbles back. The Niners fumbled twice, both in brutal positions because McCaffrey's fumble, they were going to score on that drive. And then Ray McLeod, no, it wasn't necessarily his fault, but that fumble led to seven Kansas City points in their only touchdown. So the Niners go 0-2 on fumbles. The Chiefs go 4-5. And I mean, really, that's your game. And when you're going up against Mahomes, that you just can't, it's just the Niners almost overcame it, but it's just giving yourself too little margin for error.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people want to point the finger at Steve Wilks and everything like that, but like, honestly, like coming into the game, one of the biggest things that was a concern was the running game. Like, can they stop the run, right? Montgomery and Gibbs had run all over them the week before that. Aaron Jones had run all over them. It's an area where they struggled. And so Isaiah Pacheco, I liked the over 16 and a half rushing attempts that did come home, but we also liked the over 67 and a half rushing yards, and that didn't. Isaiah Pacheco had, I think, his worst game as a pro. Like, and it's being sort of overshadowed by the fact that they won. But, you know, a bad fumble. There were a number of, like, short yardage situations that they didn't convert, third and ones, you know, and everything like that. Pacheco was bad, Connor.
He was. He absolutely was. And going back to the point about the fumbles overall, I mean, it's just amazing. The Chiefs recovered, what, 6 of the 7 fumbles in this game. And that ends up being the I think it's very cliche to say, but you can only make so many mistakes against the Chiefs. You have to keep your foot on the gas. You need to play with a significant lead. And you're right, Matthew. There was even leaks in the ship on this one. Bad Pacheco game. It felt like the Chiefs, they got nothing from Kelce in the first half. He had a huge second half, but he was completely eliminated in the first half, as much of the offense was. There was obviously some special teams mistakes as well. So, and this was the story of the Chiefs this year, which I think makes it so much more frustrating to everyone that roots for a team that is not the Kansas City Chiefs, is that they didn't have a typical regular season held to their standards. When you look at how vulnerable it felt like they were going into the playoffs, they kept finding a way to win. And then you look at the first half of the Super Bowl, where Shanahan blows what now his third 10-point lead in a Super Bowl, counting his days as a coordinator with the Falcons. You just have to wonder, what is it going to take for a team, you know, to obviously be able to beat them, even when they do look this vulnerable, because now they're only going to be able to reload and get more chemistry with the weapons, which was such a problem this year.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as much as Mahomes clearly outplayed Purdy, and Mahomes was the better quarterback, but I mean, Purdy didn't make mistakes. Like, that was the concern, is that he was going to have his kind of Purdy moments of chaos. He didn't throw any picks. He didn't really throw any ball that should have been picked, unless you want to count the second play of overtime where it kind of came off Debo and Nick Bolton narrowly missed it. And let me tell you, if Nick Bolton had caught that, we would have never heard the end of it about Brock Purdy. So I'm glad that he didn't catch that ball, because otherwise it would have been off.
But you know what? Even that ball hit Debo Samuel in the hands. It was a low percentage throw, but it's like, you know, like, you expect Debo Samuel to come down with that ball.
Yeah, no, you do. And it was Mahomes who made the terrible mistake, the pick to start the second half, where he overthrows Kelce straight to Brown. And at that point, so the Niners are up 10-3. They've just caught that Mahomes pick in excellent field position. The Niners are minus 650 to win the Super Bowl at that time. And then they go down from there. And Kyle Shanahan is no stranger to being minus 650 in Super Bowls and then going down from that point. But, I mean, for all the criticism of Shanahan, and I mean, we can talk about some of the moments, but I don't think this is really on him. I think this was just a coin flip game and the coin landed Chiefs. But if I was Shanahan, the only thing that I thought was just objectively horrible was not calling timeout at the end of the first half, because he chose to get the ball back with 20 seconds instead of 60 seconds when you're in a dome and your offense at that point is looking pretty good.
Yeah.
So that was just like that. That's indefensible
And by the way, and Moody is already at that point, Moody's already hit a 50 yarder, you know? Yep. And so I think that I agree with you. That is bad. But generally speaking, like, I'm with you. Like, again, this is sort of, it goes back to the conversation we had around Dan Campbell after the Lions loss as well. It's just like, as a head coach, you have to coach with the understanding that your players are going to make plays. You have to trust that your players are going to make plays. You don't expect your special teams guy to fumble a punt. You don't expect Jake Moody to miss a extra point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you expect your offensive line to pick up Chris Jones coming in like a barrel of heat. Like, you know, like, you don't expect Chris McCaffrey to fumble on the 9-yard line. Like, so I get it, but I don't have an issue with any of his decisions. I don't even have an issue with, I get it. And I think if I was a head coach, I would want, given the new overtime rules, I personally would want the ball second, knowing what I have to get. But I don't have a huge issue with Shanahan taking the ball first in overtime. Bill Barnwell wrote a whole article about this. I think Barnwell's terrific. and, you know, just whatever. And the analytics are something like, it's like 50.8%. You know, they run a bunch of sims and everything like that in terms of whether you take it first or second. Shanahan's argument that, hey, we wanted the third possession. Assuming we score, we know they're getting another possession. And, you know, at that point, you have to trust your defense, that your defense is going to hold them to whatever they get, right? And, I mean, yeah, ultimately they converted a fourth down. But I guess I don't have a huge problem with it. Yes, maybe the Chiefs go for two, but you can't trust that they will. You know, and by the way, even if they go for two, then it's a 50-50 chance that you stop them and you win the Super Bowl, assuming you go down and you score a touchdown. So I get it, but I don't feel like that's a huge, huge knock on Shanahan.
Yeah, and I think as well, like everyone's taking shots at Shanahan with the idea that, well, there definitely would have been no third possession because the Chiefs said they would have gone for two. It's like, if the Chiefs were facing fourth and 10 on the San Francisco 34, you're telling me Andy Reid's not kicking a field goal there and there is a third possession? Like, when you go into that, the Niners were clear favorites to win when the Chiefs got the ball back in overtime. You score a field goal in that position, you are in a good spot. It's just that Mahomes is too good. But Kansas City scoring a touchdown there, at least by the odds, and you say maybe Mahomes just breaks everything. But in terms of the odds, it was more likely that the Chiefs were going to score three or zero on that possession than score a touchdown. I think that's what Shanahan was banking on. And look, Mahomes makes the play on fourth and one, and he was ultimately just too good. And I do think there is an element of, you know, we can say that, you know, this is a coin flip game. But with Mahomes is just the type of player that he is. On these high leverage third and fours, which he converted and Purdy didn't, Mahomes is just better in those spots than anyone else in football, just about. It's him and Josh Allen, really, because of what they bring with their legs as well as their passing. And Purdy, I thought Purdy was great, honestly, in Super Bowl. I thought that the moment wasn't too big for him. He played well enough to win, but he's just not Patrick Mahomes. And I think that was really the difference on the Niners not converting third and four and third and fives, which was so key at the end of regulation and in overtime. But would you have gone for it on fourth down, Connor, on either of those two bids for San Francisco?
Yeah, I think so. I think you just have to play differently. That's the story to me of this one. And I think a lot of teams going forward are going to treat Mahomes essentially how almost you would treat Brady for so long, where you're going to have to do, and even Peyton Manning for a while. Remember when the Saints in that Super Bowl did a lot of unconventional things? I think that's the treatment you're going to see for Mahomes going forward in big games, is that you're going to have to play out of your typical script no matter who else you'd be playing. I mean, and also going back to the Purdy Mahomes conversation, Jay, I mean, in six seasons as a starter, Mahomes has 18 playoff starts now, right? So it's just so, and like, I agree with you. I think Purdy did a lot of great things in this game. Nobody's even talking about Brock Purdy in this game. The only conversation I've seen is, does San Francisco have to go get a guy on the upper echelon like Mahomes? That's not a reality for 99% of NFL teams. You know, maybe one or two teams can do that this year, and the chances are still very low. The top two teams picking in the draft, and that's because it's a great quarterback class. That reality doesn't exist. The Niners built a great team. Honestly, they played a really, really good game, and somehow they still came up short to a guy that's now 15-3 in the postseason.
15-3 in the postseason, 4-0 in his career against San Francisco, 10-3 straight up, and 11-1 with a tie against the spread when he's an underdog, and that includes the playoffs as well. I mean, like, that's the thing, Connor, is that, like, there's talent, right? Coming out of college, people are like, and you can speak to this better than anyone, Connor, coming out of talent, so it's like, okay, Mahomes has a big arm. We know he's mobile. We know there's something. But, like, I've said this all along. Patrick Mahomes on any other team without Andy Reid as his coach isn't Patrick Mahomes letters, right? I mean, like, the fact that he got to sit for a year under Alex Smith. People forget the Chiefs made the playoffs under Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes' rookie year. So unlike a lot of quarterbacks, unlike like Joe Burrow, who goes to a team that's won one game the year before, right? Most franchise quarterbacks go to crappy NFL teams. Mahomes got drafted by a playoff team and a coach in Andy Reid that had already been to a Super Bowl with Philadelphia, that was winning in Kansas City, you know, and then you've got Kelce, you've got this strong organization around you. And so the fact that he was able to sit for a year and then become a starting quarterback of an already playoff caliber team goes a long way. Now, I'm not trying to take anything away from the magic of Mahomes, because he is truly brilliant and the Brady comparisons are absolutely fair. But I'm just saying it's not apples to apples. And your point about hey, we just got to go get a guy like that. Like, that just doesn't exist. That's not a reality. I agree with you. Brock Purdy, 23 of 38, 255 yards. He scores, he throws for the touchdown, right? He three rushes for 12 yards. Don't get me started on that, right? We'll talk about that in a second.
Bad spot.
It's just brutal. But, you know, like, listen, he took what the defense gave him. His offensive line got dominated. Like, you know, let's talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
The Chiefs defensive line just completely dominated the offensive line, whether it was blitzing. They were able to get home with just rushing four as well. So he took what the defense gave him. He you know, he dumped it off to McCaffrey. He made like an off-scheduled throw to Juszczyk, which was brilliant, I thought. Like, he had nice moments. Brock Purdy played well enough to win. This loss is entirely on two fumbles. You know what I mean? Like, just two fumbles, a missed extra point, and, you know, just a bad read on an offensive line block. Again, like, that's a touchdown to Ayuk if Chris Jones gets blocked.
I mean, going back to the point about pressure, Matthew, you know, 41 dropbacks for Purdy in this game. He was pressured on 20 of them. So it's half the time.
He had no time.
He had no time. You brought up Chris Jones dominating this game. Two quarterback hits, four more pressures. Jones had six pressures on the quarterback, and I think just 35 pass rush snaps. So he's getting home one out of every five times. Yeah, and that was quite a weird storyline that I'm sure Niners fans are aware of, but not the general fan of the NFL. This, besides Trent Williams, and we saw what it was like without him, this Niners offensive line needs retooling as well. I think it's credit to Kyle Shanahan that they were as good as they were with the players they were starting on it. But the conversation around Purdy being, you know, being this Kyle Shanahan robot that is in this amazing offensive situation. Yes, Ayuk and Debo and Kittle and McCaffrey are great. The Ferraris around them, him in that offense, are amazing. But this offensive line is not the top five, top 10 unit that it's been billed as.
No.
No. And by the way, go ahead, Jay.
As you say, that's exactly right, Connor. That was the most frustrating thing about the Purdy discourse when everyone's trying to pick him apart for MVP, is the idea that, you know, he just rolls into the clear best situation in the NFL. And maybe it is, but people need to realize, like, he had a bad offensive line this year overall in terms of the pass blocking, win rate and PFF grade and all that type of stuff. Like, it's Trent Williams and then it's not much else. And, you know, Feliciano gets hurt in the Super Bowl. That hurt them. And I think as well with Purdy is that, like, he's 6'1". When there is a ton of pressure and when it's coming up the middle from Chris Jones, it's not really a place you can live. And I think that really derailed them in the third quarter, where if I'm Kyle Shanahan, what I feel most sick about is that it's that third quarter where they were in control of the game. They were minus 650 to win after the Mahomes pick. And then they call six pass plays in a row and they don't get a first down and they don't score in the third quarter. And then when the punt return fumble happens, then all of a sudden they're playing off their back foot. But I thought, I can't remember who tweeted this, but Brock Purdy, every time he came off the field in the Super Bowl, he had a lead. He did everything that he could do. It's just that Mahomes scored last.
Yeah, you know what? And by the way, to that point, also, you know, again, so much of the discourse is around Purdy, of course. But, like, think about this. And I haven't gone and I haven't watched the all 22 of this. I watched the broadcast, right? I watched it live and then I rewatched the replay on TV. But the fact of the matter is this is a team that's got Debo Samuel, George Kittle, and Brandon Ayuk in its passing attack. And I'm a big believer in targets are earned, right? And the fact of the matter is the guy that had the best game was Juwan Jennings. Like, you know what I mean? And I think partially that's because they did such a good job of taking care of the superstars of the Niners. So it was dump offs to McCaffrey's and then trying to figure out ways to get the ball to Juwan Jennings. And Juwan Jennings is a nice player and he had a great day at the office. Give him a lot of credit. He had an awesome game in the Super Bowl. But, like, you're the 49ers. Your offense can't be Juwan freaking Jennings. But, like, I feel like that's, like, you know, like, at some point they had to have a solution to get, you know, Ayuk. They each had a couple of nice moments, but, like, you're Brandon Ayuk, you're Debo Samuel, you're George Kittle. Step up in a big way. And I don't think any of them did. You know what I mean? Like, the guy that stepped up the most in the passing attack, not counting McCaffrey, was Juwan Jennings. And that can't happen in a Super Bowl, Jay Croucher.
No, it can't, Matthew. And it would have been interesting. Say Mahomes gets stopped on 4th-and-1 in overtime. Like, who wins MVP for the Niners? Because I feel like it would have been, I mean, look, I would have voted Purdy because I think that he played the best. And also, I mean,
Bosa had a great game.
Yep.
Yeah. Most, McCaffrey had the fumble. Sure. So I would have voted Purdy, but I think McCaffrey probably would have won just because he had 160 yards and a touchdown and had that awesome the screen pass play around the left sideline in overtime, which Purdy did a great job getting that ball to him. But for a time, like there was a time in real life in the Super Bowl where Juwan Jennings was minus 105 to win Super Bowl MVP live. he was 350-1 before the game, and he was minus 105 when it looked like the Niners were a first down away from ending it in regulation. So, yeah, he comes out of the game looking great. I think, yeah, Kittle and Debo, who and they were both banged up. They both came out of the game at different points, but disappointing from them. I will say, though, that I am, and I'm sure Kyle Shanahan cares that I'm proud of him, but I am proud of Kyle Shanahan for going for it on 4th and 3 in the fourth quarter where they dial up that play to George Kittle. He gets out of bounds. I was surprised. I thought Kyle was definitely going to kick in that spot, but he rose to the occasion there, and so did Kittle. It's just a shame for them that Debo and Kittle couldn't get, they couldn't combine for more than 37 yards in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, right. Debo 3 for 33 under his receptions and receiving prop. Like he was, the line was 4.5 and 58 yards, and 92% of the handle on DraftKings was on the over, by the way. So Debo goes just 3 for 33. Ayuk 3 for 49. Also under his receptions and receceiving yards prop. It was set at 4.5 and 62.5. George Kittle, 2 receptions for 4 yards. You know, like his line was 50.5. 96% of the handle on DraftKings was on the over as well. And so, yeah, I mean, Juwan Jennings, who had a 14.5, you know, receiving yards prop, goes 4 for 42, catch the touchdown, also throws one as well. And so, him and Nick Foles, the only two players in Super Bowl history to catch a touchdown and throw a touchdown in the Super Bowl. I just, you know, and you can give some credit to the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, defense, but like, you know, those guys have to get open again. Targets are earned, Connor.
It's going to be a fascinating offseason because you have, you know, the questions around Ayuk's long-term status with the contract. Obviously, you have a lot of guys there that are already paid that aren't going anywhere, remaking the offensive line. Juwan Jennings, guys, good time to be a free agent when that's the lasting memory. Juwan Jennings really almost had the Malcolm Smith-esque Super Bowl MVP where you're like, what? But right. It would have been amazing if he was able to close it out. But go ahead.
I was just going to say the other thing when you just talk about the 49ers – I believe the 49ers have the third oldest roster in the NFL at the moment. You know, and they for the most part they stayed relatively healthy this year.
Yeah.
And so you'd have to wonder. Like, I feel a lot better about the Chiefs' chances of getting back there than I do about the Niners' chances. This sort of felt like this was their chance, right? You know, I mean, I feel like, I guess there's teams in the AFC too, but I mean, I just feel like Detroit is ascending. Green Bay is ascending. Obviously, Philadelphia and Dallas are both loaded. Like, the NFC is suddenly, you know, the Rams were, you know, a breath away, right? Tampa Bay seems to be sort of coming along. You know, assuming a healthy Kirk Cousins, and if he goes back to Minnesota, like, Minnesota showed improvements on defense this year, and we know they can move the ball. Like, the NFC is, I think, more competitive than we might think initially. I feel better about the NFC after this postseason than I did probably before in terms of a competitive balance. So, you know, this one's a tough one for 49er fans, Jay.
I think the difficult thing though with the AFC is I think you make the case the 6 best quarterbacks in football are all in the AFC between Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Lamar. I think that's kind of your undisputed top 4. And then personally, I would have Stroud and Herbert probably 5 and 6. And so they're all in the AFC, which makes it difficult. The Niners, they still enter next season as Super Bowl favorites. But, I mean, they're plus 550 to win the Super Bowl next year, which is, you know, less than a 15% chance. And they were minus 650 to win the Super Bowl this one in the third quarter. But my last question to you guys on the game, and I'm not saying this to justify my own losing position, but if they played this game again on Sunday, would you take Niners -2 or Chiefs +2, having seen how it played out this last Sunday?
Still Chiefs +2, honestly. Because okay. I'll tell you why. I mean, again, it's sort of Mahomes. It's Mahomes and it's Andy Reid. Like, like, again, I don't have any issues with what Kyle Shanahan did. Maybe he should have been more aggressive at the end of the first half. Okay, fair enough. But honestly, like, again, you expect players to make plays, and if the players make plays, but I thought Andy Reid called a brilliant game. And, you know, we talk about that fourth and one. As an offense, this is not an offense that uses designed runs from Mahomes. They haven't done that in a while. Like, there's always some scramble plays, but they just, that's not a part of their offense, is designed runs from Mahomes. And yet in the Super Bowl, they pulled that out, right? You know what I mean? Like, and they had that, the game to win the play to win the Super Bowl, corndog hybrid, you know, play that they used against Philadelphia last year as well. Like, I mean, just like Andy Reid, I thought, just called a brilliant game in a way that just, you know, Shanahan didn't. They were prepared. And I also think Spagnuolo, I think Spags called an unbelievable great game. Yep. Right. And I like, again, I have no issue with the Wilkes. I have no issue with Shanahan, the game they called, but I think those guys are better. And I just think Pacheco doesn't have a bad day at the office. It would be close. The line would be two again, but like, I'm not betting against Mahomes. Like, I just don't know how you do that. Like, the thing I said all, you know, as I was going through parties at the Super Bowl and I would meet people and fans would come up or whatever, who you got? And I just said, I don't understand how Mahomes and the Chiefs went on the road to Buffalo and beat Josh Allen, then went on the road to Baltimore and beat Lamar Jackson, but they can't beat Brock Purdy on a neutral field. I just don't see how that happens. You know what I mean? And ultimately, you know, again, the defense, and I talked about, you know, Andy Reid 6-1 off of a bye in the Mahomes era in the playoffs. I understand the question, Jay, and it's fair. And I think a lot of people would still think the Niners are favored or it's a pick 'em. Honestly, I probably should be just a pick 'em on a neutral field, but it's hard for me to bet against Patrick Mahomes or Andy Reid until proven otherwise, Connor.
All right, guys, any closing thoughts before we sign off here, before we take a little hiatus, but we will be back because all three of us will be at the NFL Combine.
Yeah, I want to ask Jay this question. I have a question for Jay.
Going out on a high note, Jay.
I'm dead serious. So I had my last same game parlay of the year for DraftKings. And this is what I chose. I chose the Chiefs +2. I chose the an alt line of Pacheco over on the rushing yards at 50.
That hit.
And then I chose Brock Purdy over 12.5 rushing yards. That's what I posted on Saturday. But what ended up happening is that, you know, the line moved between 12.5 and 11.5. And when it closed, and they update, you know, I have a graphic on the DraftKings app, and they updated in real time because obviously odds change, everything like that. And so when it closed, the line had actually moved down to 11.5, Purdy over 11.5. And so I just want to know, do I get to count that as a win? Because ultimately, had you bet my same game parlay, there's my dumbass picture there, and it's like, you know, Matthew Berry, the Sunday Night Football analyst, here's his same game parlay. If you had bet it, like, you know, 30 minutes before kickoff, you won. But what I did tweet out was 12.5. So I'm just curious, do I get to count? So some people got it. The people that took it when I initially tweeted it out, they lost, right? But if you looked at, if you went on the app on Sunday, on game day, and took my parlay, you won. So my parlay did hit, but do I get to count that as a win, Jay? You tell me.
Well, two things. Firstly, when Connor set you up for that, I thought you were going to talk about how awesome it was to interview Puka Nacua or something and not complain about your own suspect same game parlay. Second, it absolutely counts as a loss.
Wait, tell me for one second. Hang on for a second. I'm sorry. You and I have worked together every single day for 2 straight years, and you thought, you, a betting man, a sharp man, a man who studies trends, you literally thought that I was going to talk about something that wasn't myself.
That's true. No, I should never. Come on, I should never back the 10-1 Matthew altruism on the podcast. No, it's absolutely a loss. You chose 12.5 as the rushing line. Now, to be fair, I think your better argument is I'm pretty sure Brock Purdy got the 13th yard. It was just a bad spot. So that would be the thing. You need to contact NFL Stats and Info. But if you tweeted out 12.5, unfortunately, it's a loss. But I watched that in real time because he got, I think he got 9 on the first carry. And then he got three on the second carry, but I swear to God, he got 4 yards on that carry. And I had over 12 and a half as well. So, we all got screwed there one last time on Brock Purdy.
And then the kneel for the loss. Truly wonderful for all of us backing Purdy 12 and a half. All right, guys. Thank you to everyone. Matthew, go ahead.
Before we leave, hang on 1 second. I'm just curious, just Super Bowl week. I'm just curious, who was your favorite interview or what was your favorite? Two things. One was, who's your favorite Radio Row interview that we did very quickly? Because I just want to mention that all of our interviews, even if they weren't in the show, because we were only on for 1 hour. We were on from 9 to 10 a.m. local time. But there'd be a lot of times where, like, Saquon Barkley or Trey McBride, you know, that people guys would come by that wasn't in the window. And so all of our interviews are available on the NFL on NBC YouTube channel, even if they weren't actually in the 9 to 10 window, because we interviewed way more people than we had time for, which is great. So please go check all that out. I'm curious, Connor and Jay, who was your favorite interview? And then also, what was your favorite Super Bowl memory?
For me, it was Rome Odunze, because as somebody that studies the draft all year, when you get to sit and talk to a guy that's projected to be at minimum a top 10 pick, he really might go in the top 5 right now. And then everything that you loved about the player, you confirmed by talking to them. That's really, really awesome. So great talking to him. Best Super Bowl memory had nothing to do with football. It was going to the Sphere to see you too. I mean, there's just no way around it. The experience at the Sphere, we all got to hang out. It was unlike any show I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, Sphere was definitely the highlight. In terms of interviews, I'm going to go with Baker Mayfield, because we had a bit of a mishap with the timing, or rather I had a mishap with the timing where I left the set. And then Baker had to kind of wait for me for like 5 minutes. And if I were Baker Mayfield and I had to wait for Jay Croucher for 5 minutes, I wouldn't have been super happy, but he was lovely. He was very accommodating. I think we had a good chat as well. He was pretty, open about his time in Tampa and, you know, what he'd gone through the 12 months with being on four teams in 12 months. So Baker was awesome. And then the other thing too is, which wasn't captured in the interview, but Puka Nacua, after we stopped rolling, and then Puka Nacua, who's the most kind of high energy, lovable dude, he turns to us after the interview and he's like, "Guys, have you been to the Sphere yet? Looks sick." It's like, all right, this guy's awesome.
He's great.
So A plus for Puka. But those are the highlights.
I would agree with you. Puka was awesome. I agree with Rome, like, really an impressive young man there, Connor. I would have said my favorite interview, you know, Saquon's always great as well, but I would have said Baker Mayfield as well, Jay. I thought, you know, he was just so candid, so likable, really, you know, insightful. But because you said Baker, I'll just say this. I say, to me, the biggest surprise, and generally speaking, you meet a lot of these guys and kind of know, but, like, I knew nothing about Kendrick Bourne. You know, when he sat down, other than, you know, I've seen the stats and everything like that, but I've never talked to him. I've never even seen him interviewed. Like, you're just sort of like, I don't know what we're getting with Kendrick Bourne. And he was awesome. I thought he was great. So that was really cool. Just really high energy, articulate, fun, like, smart. Like, I think my favorite answer of any question that we asked was Kendrick Bourne, when we asked him specifically about what he learned from Bill Belichick. And he gave, like, a real world example. He talked about a specific drill that that Belichick had him run, and then talked about a real world example, which ended up springing him for a game winning touchdown later. Like, and him going through the X's and O's of that. Like, I thought that was really cool. It was cool to talk to the legends. T.O. was great. Emmett Smith was great. Breeze was great. Like, it was cool to talk to some of the legends of the game as well. I thought Matt Ryan was really good. For me, I would say Baker and Kendrick Bourne. I agree, the Sphere, hanging out with all you guys and all the all of our producers and, you know, the guys that make us look better than we deserve to. That was a lot of fun. We had a great night that night. I'll give you one sort of just funny anecdote, though. So I, you know, as you guys know, my wife ended up coming in Thursday night for the game, and, you know, we stayed through the weekend and we went to some parties. And so on Saturday night, DraftKings hosted a party that my wife and I were invited to at Delilah in Las Vegas, which is awesome, by the way. If you ever get a chance to go to Delilah in New York, in LA or Las Vegas, Delilah is just amazing. But anyway, so we're at Delilah, and you know, there's all these different, I mean, the party got ridiculous. Like, the Kardashians were there, Justin Bieber was there, Tiffany Haddish, Nick Lachey, Vanessa Lachey. I met both of them. They're nice, but whatever. So my, it was just sort of this rant. LeBron showed up. Like it was like a crazy, crazy party.
How do you not start with LeBron, by the way?
Hang on. Okay. Yeah, sure, LeBron. Well, because like the Kardashians and like Kendall Jenner, they were like, not that I get anywhere near them. They were in a separate, you know, non Matthew Berry section. But they were, you know, but like it was, and same with, you know, Bieber's in a corner. Sean Payton was there. Russell Wilson was there. Dave Portnoy was there. Like it was a bunch of, you know, people. And so some I met, some I didn't, but whatever. And LeBron rolled in late because he was at another party. So LeBron and Draymond Green and Rich Paul all sort of rolled in late, a big crew of them. But here's the thing. So there was one person that I met, and I was super excited to meet him. And so I went over to meet him. I'm like, hey, I'm a fan, you know, so great. He's like, oh, thank you so much. You know, nice to meet you. And I said, hey, I want you to meet my wife. This is my wife, Beth. And so Beth turns to him and she says, oh, it's so nice to meet you. What's your name? And he goes, Flavor Flav. Because it's Flavor Flav. And like, I don't think Flavor Flav has ever been asked his name in his entire life. Because it's like, you know, he's got the chains and the glasses. Like, it's Flavor Flav. Like, the most, one of the most recognizable guys, you know, like, Flavor Flav, when he goes out, it's not like he's like in a, you know, a hat and like dark glasses trying
to hide. He's his character.
No, he's all in. He is freaking Flavor Flav. And he's got the big glasses. He's got the watcher. I mean, like, it's like, it is full on Flavor Flav. And I'm just like, he takes it. He could not have been a sweeter, by the way. He could not have been sweeter, but like, I can't, I bet he's never been asked that in his life. What's your name? And like, so there's a moment and he pauses and just, he holds out his hand and smiles and says, I'm Flavor Flav. Yeah. I mean, just, it was.
I'm just picturing like, Beth standing there expecting him to say that his name is like Brenton or Josh.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Right. Now I'm Clarence. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. Anyway, so, you guys took a great picture.
And then I said, can we, Flav, can we get a picture? And he couldn't have been more gracious. And so we did that. And anyway, but that was like just an amazing, like, you know, I love my wife moment, but, you know, honey, what are we doing?
Perfect. Perfect. All right, guys. Well, that's it for us. Thank you to everybody that's been rocking with us the entire season. We're not disappearing for the offseason. Like I said, all three of us are going to be at the NFL Combine. I'm sure we're going to have awesome interviews, but to hold you over, I think we have 23 interviews from Super Bowl week that you can go watch on the NFL on NBC YouTube channel. Even the ones that aren't in our full episodes that are just standalones, Drew Brees, Austin Eckler. There are so many to go through over there. So for
Trey McBride, Dalton Kincaid,
yes, you know, Jalen Hyatt, who had some interesting notes about his usage next year. There's a lot of fantasy stuff in there, a lot of football stuff, a lot of great stuff all around. All right.
And also, we're also going to release a bonus episode of Fantasy Football Happy Hour this year that will piece together some of the best the interviews that you have not heard yet as well. So if you're listening to this, if you're just listening to the podcast, keep the feed on because there'll be another episode. Take a short hiatus. And as Connor said, we're going to be out at the NFL Combine interviewing players, coaches, general managers, you know, and everyone else. And potentially, and then we'll get an update on, you know, what new jobs Jay's kids have, you know, because we know they're not going to college at this point. Like, have they picked out a trade school yet, Jay, your children?
You know, my favorite underrated thing about that whole disaster, and I don't know why I'm still laughing about it. It's not that funny, but Damian Dabrowski, our producer, he told me the morning after Joe Flacco cost me an ungodly amount of money, that night at the NFLPA VIP party, which I never made it to because I was 12 old-fashioned deep drinking away my comeback player of the year sorrows at Momofuku with Connor. Damien told me that he searched through all three rooms of the party to try and find Joe Flacco to take a photo with him to mock me. And unfortunately, he could not locate Joe Flacco. But I'm just
back on the couch.
In that moment, was like, I must find Joe Flacco. Just stick it to Croucher. It's very good.
That's amazing. I wish Jamie had told me that because I would have joined in on that mission. I was at that party. It was great. You know, our friends at the NFLPA always take care of us. We were all invited. Me, Damian, and Lawrence made it, but sadly you two guys did not. But I got to, you know, meet a bunch of players, including my ride or die, Amon-Ra St. Brown, which was cool. Got a picture with him and Golden Tate, my buddy Golden Tate. So that was pretty cool.
I was consoling Jay as a good friend of the show. I think after the text, Matthew, you understand.
I do. Right. I totally do.
All right, guys. That's it for us. For Jay and Matthew, I'm Connor. Next time you see us, we'll be at the NFL Combine in just a couple of weeks.
Peace out.